In today's episode of Cinema Men,
when I saw him in the trailer, it was kind of like, oh, cool. But if I saw him appear, if I just was watching the movie and I'm like, this is a fight between Captain America and Iron Man, and then out of nowhere, you get Tony Stark yelling, under roofs! And then out of nowhere, web shot, Spider-Man's there, the theater would erupt.
I would have nodded.
That way, everybody would have flipped. Like, the thing.
Collectively.
The thing.
Why are we talking about Tom Holland's first Spider-Man appearance? Are we going to touch on Joel Schumacher's Batman movies? Could enough people really nut at the same time to push an entire theater a foot backwards? Tune in to find out all that and more on today's episode of Cinema Men.
Welcome back to I Don't Want to Tell Your Story Because You're an Insensitive, Self-Centered Moron. I've told a lot of stories about young people, and I always feel there's hope. Your one-stop shop for movie news! And that was a quote from the recently departed Joel Schumacher.
That's a beautiful quote to pick.
And you're Zane.
And I'm Casey. You gotta remember, you also didn't say your name.
Yeah, should I restart again?
No, I think we're good. I think this
I'll
is
restart
perfect.
Again. I'll restart again. I haven't done this in a while. I haven't.
I'm gonna let you know if you restart again. I'm keeping it in.
All right, ready?
Yep.
Don't edit any of this.
I didn't plan on.
Welcome back to. I don't want to tell your story because you're an insensitive, self-centered moron. I've told you a lot of stories. Fuck! I've told you.
And I'm Zane. All right,
fuck it. I'm Casey. God, it's tough to stumble over your words.
It's pretty easy
anyway,
to stumble over your words.
In more serious news.
Yes.
And this actually really does suck.
Yeah.
I found out earlier today that Joel Schumacher died of cancer at 80 years old. Boy, had a long, long career. Zane, what do you know about Mr. Joel?
I'll be blatantly honest, very little. I've mainly heard what I've heard through you and through the podcast, because I haven't had many deep dives into people in recent time, but I do know very little things, such as he directed a couple episodes of House of Cards. I do know that he directed the wonderful movie Number 23. He directed, what was it, 2004 Phantom of the Opera?
Yes.
And he also produced two of the very memorable Batman films, Batman Forever with Val Kilmer and Batman and Robin with George Clooney.
Excellent, yeah. And the cool thing about Joel Schumacher is that his career started in the 80s, but like when you look at it, even from the titles that you named, he had a pretty varied selection of things that he directed, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like he did a musical, an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical in the form of Phantom of the Opera. He did the two Batman movies. He did a movie called Phone Booth,
right,
with Colin Farrell.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's like an incredibly tight, tense, very short thriller that I think is like actually really good. He did 8mm with Nicolas Cage and Joaquin Phoenix, which is like this grimy kind of gross. I guess society movie, you know, Joker, hello. But yeah, no, it's like unfortunate that everybody kind of harps back. That's the word. Everybody harps.
The one where you play the strings.
Correctamundo. Harpo Marx. The one that everybody harps on the fact that Batman and Robin is like viewed as a bad movie. But I think even you and I can kind of. It's not that bad.
The thing is, it's going to be very hard to not see the appreciation and the beauty of what he created, because you're also asking people who are big Sam Raimi fans, and I am a big Spider-Man 3 fan. And when I say fan, mm-hmm. I think we've had this conversation plenty of times. I don't even mean I like Spider-Man 3 in the sense that it's so bad that it's good. I think we rewatched it, and I genuinely just saw a lot of things about it that I like.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely. It's a lot easier from our sense for those specific kind of superhero films that get a lot of backlash to find the little pieces to appreciate in the backlash.
Yeah, definitely. And like the things that people don't like about Batman and Robin, I think they're fair and they're founded, but the fact that it makes them look at the director in a certain way when it's just one movie, you know, in the scheme of his entire career, that kind of sucks. I know, like, he also did The Lost Boys, which I should have mentioned first. Like, that's probably his most popular movie. Yeah, exactly. I remember my ex-girlfriend, she showed me that movie, and when I saw Joel Schumacher's name in the opening credits, because I didn't know that he had directed that, I accidentally smashed my glass, and it broke on the ground. I broke a glass because of Joel Schumacher, and I'll forever remember that. I may not have liked the movie Lost Boys, but I was like, hell yeah, brother, went for a fucking ride.
Other movies that I was unaware that he had made, or that I even knew existed, much like it happens, you know, how like he made Batman films, and then other people made Batman films. Another film that I'm pretty sure was remade after he made it, Flatliners.
Yeah.
Because he made a version that had Julia Roberts and Kevin Bacon and Kiefer Sutherland in it. Kiefer Sutherland has been in something that's not 24.
Yeah, The Lost Boys.
He was even in The Lost Boys too?
Yeah, you dummy. Figure it out.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I'm a lost cause.
So another, I would argue, important element of Joel Schumacher's career. Dude was openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that directly correlates to the fact that after he... and this is, like, so stupid. I'm going to say it this way, but this is not what I mean.
Okay.
After he put bat nipples on the suits, people were pissed off and, like, super homophobic about it because they thought that was gay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he fucking did it himself. It's not like he's the one that was, you know, creating the suits. I'm sure he had to sign off on it, but like, it's just another thing that he probably had to deal with in his day to day. That like, oh, good, you know, I can't even make a suit that's my own in my own film without it being, you know, slurred and have homophobes coming out of the woodwork to, you know, be pissed off about it. God forbid.
Right. There's something that's very interesting to the creation of the bat suit through. And I mean every single attempt at a remake. Anything, the Val Kilmer suit, the George Clooney suit, the Christian Bale suit, the Robert Pattinson suit, the Ben Affleck suit, they all, I mean, Ben Affleck's like metal robot suit got a lot of backlash. Robert Pattinson's, we've only seen flashes of it so far, and it's already getting a lot of backlash. They all get backlash for their own different reasons. I got a quote.
Yeah.
From Schumacher, I believe this was last year, that he was talking to Vulture, and I don't mean Michael Keaton. Joel Schumacher, this is what it says. When Vulture asked Schumacher, a gay man, about the criticisms for the noted queer subtext of his Batman movies, the director replied, "You know what I think? I shouldn't have made a sequel, and that's all there is to it. I learned that sequels are only made for one reason. I'm sure that Batman Forever was the cheapest Batman movie ever made because Val Kilmer didn't get a lot of money. Nicole Kidman didn't. Chris O'Donnell didn't. And I didn't. Tommy got a bit of payday because he had won the Oscar for The Fugitive and Jim Carrey had already done Ace Ventura." So that was his quote. He was really thinking that I don't think that I really should have done a sequel, and that's really all there is to it. And you probably really just make sequels for the money, as opposed to moving the story forward, unless you've intentionally written the script or intentionally tried to make the picture layout like Christopher Nolan did, where the intention of the first Batman film was to move forward versus, I made this Batman film, it's a great standalone film, and, oh, we can capitalize on it now with the sequel. It was like, no, Christopher Nolan knew, I'm going, this is part one, then we're going to get part two, which is going to lead into part three. It's a hard difference to see when a movie that is a trilogy set is set up in a way to be told as one story versus when it's one story that's been split up into three parts for capitalization. It's like Dark Knight trilogy, I consider, oh, that was intended to be three great films that told some chronological story all the way through, versus, let's say that, I don't know, the Hobbit trilogy, where that was definitely kind of unnecessarily split up.
Right, okay, I get what you're saying. Yeah, okay,
cool.
And I feel like that's made even worse with the fact that Batman and Robin being the, I guess it's a sequel to Batman Forever. It's not a part of the, it's not a continuation of the Tim Burton films, I'm pretty sure. I liken them to being very different films. But Warner Brothers and, who was it? It was like the toy manufacturer. They wanted Batman and Robin to be a lot more family friendly, more aimed towards kids. And Schumacher has gone on record saying he thinks he went a little too far with that, and that he came out and apologized to fans who were frustrated with the film that actually came out. So it's like, even after it came out, it's not like he distanced himself. He literally, mm-hmm. like, he confronted it, and he basically explained exactly what happened, even if in that industry, you probably shouldn't do that, because you're probably just going to get fucked over.
Mm-hmm. You know what's really weird for a director? I mean, growing up, I've seen movies that I don't like. That's just a given. That's going to happen. There are bad films. And there are even good films that you just don't see the same way. It's very interesting for a director to, instead of just having to take backlash because it's unavoidable that somebody is going to dislike your film, there's definitely somebody out there that doesn't like The Godfather. There's definitely someone out there that does not like Shawshank. It's very weird to have to hear a director apologize to people for them not liking his work, because it's very interesting and kind of upsetting and frustrating in a way to have to hear a director who's had success and is talented and has done many different things that deserve being noteworthy and credited apologize to an audience for not making them as happy as he could have. But like in a way humbling. It's not like, I'm sorry because you handed me your script and I didn't do it the way you wanted to. It's more, I'm sorry you didn't like what I saw in my head.
Mirror that idea with someone like, I don't know, Zack Snyder, mm-hmm. you know, who recently has been slated to make the Snyder Cut of I almost said Jurassic Park. Justice League.
Jurassic League.
And that's the thing. Like, everyone didn't like Justice League because it's a not very good movie. But it's not. But he didn't then turn around and say, "Oops, sorry."
Mm-hmm.
No, now he's like, "No, well, I'm gonna show you my real vision." It's like, ugh, God, we got it. We already got your vision. It sucks. All your films feel the same. They all look the same.
Casey is showing me a pencil, and I'm assuming that it's symbolic of needing to rewrite all of Zack Snyder's scripts. Now, we don't like the Batman v Superman. We don't like the Justice League that he did. Oh, no. But you and I have agreed, at least in the past, and when I say the past, I mean right before we started recording, that Watchmen, pretty good.
Watchmen is an anomaly for me. Watchmen is, I like the movie for its own merits.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that it is diametrically opposed to its source material. Its source material is literally all about how glorifying violence in the form of like comic books and superheroes is like a very stupid thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is then the comic was basically a way of showing like if superheroes were real, they'd be fucking awful. They'd be shitty people.
Yeah.
And then the movie comes out and all the action is glorified and like awesome, frankly. It looks great. That's my only issue with it, and that's a lot of people's issues with it, but I think the filmmaking behind it is great. I think I like the cast. I like the writing. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
And that's the only issue I have with it.
I'm very curious. Do you think that Zack Snyder I'm just going to throw this out there because now we're on the topic of Snyder. Do you think that in the case of Batman v Superman or Suicide Squad or Justice League, that Zack Snyder himself had enough creative manpower to shift the unanimous hate into at least a nice 50-50 split of this movie is good, this movie is bad? Do you think he himself had enough power, or that there were too many mistakes besides Zack Snyder that made the movie unsavable?
So you know how Kevin Feige is basically the head of Marvel Entertainment right now? Marvel Cinematic Entertainment?
Yay.
That was basically Zack Snyder's role after Man of Steel came out. He was basically the one creative vision leading the DC Cinematic Universe. So he did, I guess, is what I'm saying. He did creatively push the films exactly where he wanted them to be. And I personally think that's why they failed so massively as they did. Because no one goes into a movie like that, like Justice League. Oh, I guess that's a poor example because that was like half directed by Joss Whedon. But no one goes into a movie called Batman vs. Superman and wants to sit around for 2.5 hours listening to political nonsense, seeing Jesse Eisenberg in a shitty wig, and then finally about 4.5 minutes of a fight before a big booger comes in and they have to fight that shit together, you know? So it's like that is his creative vision, and that's awesome. It just doesn't work.
It's, yeah,
I guess.
And I guess it's the same thing with Suicide Squad of we want to see essentially what it sounds like on the tin without any previous knowledge of any Suicide Squad written out script or comic or anything like that. On the tin, you almost want to see these bad guys doing heist-like duties, and
that would have been awesome. If I could have seen that would have been awesome.
Heist-like duties with the intention of knowing that they will die if they don't comply. Villains kind of like the edge of death. Like, they very clearly, they don't just do bad things and say, but also, no, I don't want to do that because I'm a little too scared to die.
I don't want to die.
They like it. There's like riding the high, the adrenaline. I mean, you look at the Joker, and he can be dangled upside down by his foot off of a building where if he's dropped, he'll die, and he'll just be laughing because now he's filled with this adrenaline of like, these are the kind of moments that I live to get myself caught up in. I will never let them live down the poor CGI'd animation version of Killer Croc, because if you take Killer Croc out of the Rockstar video games, that man is nightmare-inducing. He is...
Rocksteady.
Rocksteady? Rockstar did Rocksteady. GTA. You're right.
Yes.
You're right. I did the thing. Oh, no, Miss Steve's big day.
You're a fucking idiot. And first of all, Joel Schumacher, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that we've spent so much time, about 5 minutes, talking about these assholes that aren't you.
Yeah.
First of all.
Yeah.
And second of all, have you ever seen the 1966 Batman live-action series with Adam West?
Oh my gosh, I've seen. Let's see, and Adam. I remember very vividly Adam West and a ladder, and there's a shark, and he says, "Quick, give me the bat shark repellent." That's the thing.
Yep, that's from the. That's actually from the movie based on
I've seen that
series, but.
Is the series the where some days you just can't get rid of a bomb is from?
I'm not sure. I own the entire series, which is just 3 seasons, but I'm not even sure. I haven't watched it all yet. But I brought that up because, back to Schumacher, Batman and Robin, as much as it is maligned, it's basically the purest modern recreation of the kind of vibes that the series in the 60s gave off, you know? You know how there's like the big like pow, bam,
yes,
zap, those
I
kinds
agree.
Of things, you know? That doesn't happen in Batman and Robin, but it's like that kind of like stylistic flair I think is still there. Mm-hmm. Again, it doesn't work terribly well. But the fact that like it decided to be fun with it rather than like a gothic okay, but again, now I'm talking around in circles because I was just talking about how Watchmen, the movie, is diametrically opposed, whereas the Batman comics are so dark and like it's literally about him. Okay, so I don't know. I think I'm just talking in circles, so let's see what you have to think and say.
I just found something very interesting in what you had said. There's something very interesting. So he would have grown up and seen the Adam West Batman series and movie before he ever made a Val Kilmer or George Clooney movie. So these are these are things that he experienced. And as you grow up, as you watch films, you want to recreate in the style of what you witnessed, what inspired you, what you appreciate. So it's very... I feel kind of bad for him because there's this kind of like this line that he's about to cross where he wants to work off of that comic style that you're talking about with the bang pow whatnot, where it's not that it's gimmicky in a bad way per se, but it's like it's supposed to feel like you're reading a comic book that you would have gotten from a nice little comic shop versus a dark, gritty movie like Watchmen started to introduce into the realm of DC.
But the fact that Batman and Robin was so cartoony and stupid is kind of the reason why Christopher Nolan then went on to make the darker Batman movies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we can kind of thank Batman and Robin for the Dark Knight trilogy in a way.
For sure. I mean, that's the other thing. There's going to be... It's not necessarily that Joel Schumacher failed at what he did. No matter what, he inspired something else. That's probably the most beautiful takeaway I could take from anything in the Batman films that he made, is that when something is made amazingly, nobody wants a recreation, right? Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy got outstanding reviews all the way through, even though Dark Knight Rises got a little bit less than Dark Knight, there's this overwhelming response that when Ben Affleck was like, now I'm going to do Batman, people kind of wanted to say, oh, Batman's done. Like, we finally got Batman. Don't do it again. But I'm sure back in the day when Adam West, I don't even think Adam West was the first Batman, was he? Lewis Wilson played Batman and Douglas Croft played Robin. People remember Adam West's comedic reasons, of course. And I'm sure people love Jack Nicholson's Joker. They kind of just love these things existing. And once you've got what you love, you don't want to see it recreated. But if you're inspired and you get your own vision for it, you want to recreate it. And that's what happened to Joel Schumacher wanting to recreate now his own vision. And he was kind of at this bad, I don't know how else to say it. He's kind of at this bad impasse of where, people saw two different versions of a Batman that they wanted, and he was kind of not directly appealing to either side. It was kind of,
right. Yeah.
There was kind of like a, and then here's my take versus like, this is my direct audience.
Yeah, couple that with the fact that there was so much studio interference from Warner Brothers, and the fact that, like, no matter how many times we can say, oh my god, this idea right here, it's been done perfectly. Mm-hmm. We don't need any more of that. But then it turns into a cash cow, and they're like, oh no, we can't go another 5 years without idea again, you know?
There's something so weird in the idea of remakes, and when you say... Is it we've peaked and therefore we shouldn't keep making it? Or are you on the side of like, once the sequel comes out, you somehow like the sequel more than the original? Like, everybody, when Heath Ledger did Joker, nobody wanted more Joker. He did Joker, he got it, we're done. So when Joaquin Phoenix was gonna do Joker, we got a big 50-50. Oh, there's no way he lives up to Heath Ledger's. And I mean, that's technically not the point. This is supposed to be like a different version of a Joker. Not like he's not trying to one up Heath Ledger. He's doing his own take. That's the hard thing for people to get across when a sequel or remake comes out, is he's not trying to continue Heath Ledger's Joker, and he's not trying to remake Heath Ledger's Joker. He is trying to be a new Joker. Like, Heath Ledger didn't do Jack Nicholson's Joker. So if you were trying to see Heath Ledger as a new Jack Nicholson Joker, you probably didn't like Heath Ledger's Joker. But if you saw Heath Ledger as his own version of the Joker, you could get behind it. And so it's...
So what do these people think when they saw Jared Leto?
That is... You know, it's amazing that I completely forgot that he existed and jumped right from Heath Ledger to Joaquin Phoenix.
Jared Leto... is the Batman and Robin of Jokers.
I like 30 Seconds to Mars.
I like Mr. Nobody.
I like Mr. Nobody.
And that nice little quick thing where he kind of can't see out of his eyes anymore in Fight Club. Ooh, that was pretty neat.
No dope.
How did we talk today? Are we okay?
It's kind of, it's just kind of one of those, let's blame it on the heat.
Yeah, also the alcohol.
Oh, wow. Oh,
it's
wow.
It's a Jamie Foxx song from Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh, thank that, you, Spider-Man.
That's his explanation for his poor performance.
You yeah, remembered my birthday. I am your eyes and ears.
You just reminded me. So now we're on the topic of Spider-Man, which is one of my favorite things that happens in this podcast, is we always find a way to Spider-Man.
Before we get into Spider-Man.
Okay, fine. I'll hold my nose.
Joel Schumacher, rest in peace. You had a great career. I love most of your movies. And even the ones that I don't love, I appreciate like a motherfucker. Mm-hmm. God bless and good luck. What do you have to say?
We are in this world. We're in this beautiful world. We were just talking about Batman and Joker remakes, and there have been Spider-Man remakes. Obviously, you and I will forever agree that Tobey Maguire is iconic, and it's very hard to replace Tobey Maguire in any light. One thing that really bothered me with Tom Holland's Spider-Man. This is a very mundane thing to be bothered about, but man, it bothers me. One thing that I really don't like is movie trailers. I really feel like I could ruin a movie's joke or the comedy of a movie or the experience of a movie by seeing the trailer, because they could put end scenes in the trailer and I don't know that they're end scenes. They could put lines in there that are amazing that don't have as much impact once I finally hear them in the film, et cetera, et cetera.
Did Tom Holland cut the trailers together?
And then he webbed it together with his hands.
He webbed it together.
And
then, thank you very much.
If he cut the trailers together, he would have just said, "Hey guys, Tony Stark dies at the end of Endgame," because he spoils everything. One thing that bothered me, and this is on Marvel, Spider-Man's appearance in, was it Civil War that he first appeared, I believe? Now that I'm looking back at it,
yeah,
yes.
It was in the trailer.
Spider-Man's appearance would have been unbelievably welcoming if it wasn't in the trailer and just happened during the film. This is my take on it. I think when I saw him in the trailer, it was kind of like, oh, cool. But if I saw him appear, if I just was watching the movie and I'm like, this is a fight between Captain America and Iron Man, and then out of nowhere you get Tony Stark yelling under roofs, and then out of nowhere web shot Spider-Man's there, the theater would erupt.
I would have nutted.
That way everybody would have flipped, like the thing
collectively,
the thing, everybody would have, there would have been one big collective nut, the entire theater would have been shifted back a foot.
Ew. Okay, yes.
In honor of Spider-Man, we shoot our own webs. That's what we're saying. So,
bazinga.
So that's just one thing that came to mind. Do you agree that Tom Holland's entire Spider-Man career potentially could have gotten off to a far greater start? And I'm not saying better than Tobey Maguire. I'm just saying far greater start if he had miraculously appeared in the film versus having been previewed in the trailer.
Yeah, that would have been brilliant. But too many real world things would have gotten in the way of that. Like keeping that shit tight lipped.
Yeah, but
keeping
still.
That, like, you know, keeping that quiet, keeping the fact that they were in a partnership with Sony so that they could take the Spider-Man characters and put them into the universe for a few movies. Like that whole thing, you know, what sucks about movies and what takes away from like the magic of it sometimes is the background money that has to, you know, flow between hands.
Yeah.
During the productions and all that shit. Like, I don't know. That's such an interesting thing. Like, how could they have kept that tight-lipped? Did anyone hear about it before the trailer?
I think I that's a really good question. I don't think I remember hearing anything about it before the trailer. I think I remember people being like, the trailer confirms Spider-Man is in the next movie. But that's kind of, I mean, the most I've ever seen Spider-Man be tight-lipped was Spider-Verse nobody knew was happening until the trailer came out.
Oh.
Because that was, true, I mean, yeah. The thing I remember John Mulaney talking about, he got this call of like, would you like to come in and do this voice acting work for this untitled film? Like, they wouldn't tell him anything about the project. And so he comes in. They don't tell him anything at all about the project until like all of the cast are in there at the same time. And
yeah.
I think they did the best job I've heard about with keeping, specifically at least a superhero film, under wraps until the launch of it. And I get the point of a trailer is to increase the hype and make sure that everybody goes to see the film. So a trailer probably, right, in the bigger sense, has to happen in order to gain popularity, in order to bring people into the theater. Yeah. Which, when this entire film is dedicated to Spider-Man, it's a lot harder to hide Spider-Man. But
yeah,
in Civil War, people were already going to go see Civil War just for the sake, absolutely, of Captain America versus Iron Man. So I think in that sense, it would have been a lot cooler to see them. I mean, they already hide things at the end of their films. And
yeah,
like, true. This is a stupid minor one, but like, I didn't hear any spoilers about Howard the Duck making a cameo in any of the Marvel films. And then that happened. I was like, oh, cool. So I just think it would have been a lot cooler. I don't know how easy it would have been, but it would have been a lot cooler to see Spider-Man appear like a legendary Pokemon that I didn't know existed for the first time versus he's on the cover of the Pokemon game. I'm like, okay, I'm going to run into this guy at some point. That was a weird analogy that I liked a lot.
Hey, fair enough. But Civil War came out in 2016, right?
Yes, yes. Around that, at least,
Amazing
for sure.
Spider-Man, I saw it coming Amazing right Spider-Man out. 2 cool. came out in 2014.
Oh, wow.
So I think it was after the Amazing Spider-Man 2 didn't do very well. Marvel must have, like... And again, this is all just me being a stupid idiot just lives at home and doesn't do anything in the business, but... I assume that it was after that they reached out and were like, hey, bros, you want to, like, make a deal or something? And then Civil War came out. Because, like, you know the Marvel machine.
Yeah.
It's like they have these movies planned out a fucking decade in advance because they know they have to put out 60 of them in 20 years or whatever the fuck. So it's like, that complicates the shit even further. This is so interesting. I wonder if Spider-Man was not in the trailer, if people would have been like, oh, why is he in the movie? You know, like, I can totally see people being like, oh, well, he doesn't need to be in this one. Why doesn't he have his own? You know?
Oh.
Like, there's always the naysayer.
Oh, okay. I like the...
Which is me.
So, this is an even better Spider-Man question. What reaction do you think we would have gotten more? So, Spider-Man, not in the trailer. You go to see Civil War.
On a ruse!
Steals Captain America's shield. Hey guys, it's like this little kid voice and out of nowhere, okay, boom, haven't even seen his face. Do we see Tom Holland's face in Civil War, or is it just Spider-Man?
You do. No, you, because there's the whole scene that has to set up Tony knowing him, because Tony they show Peter and Aunt May before they show Spider-Man, I'm pretty sure.
Do they?
Tony because Stark has to go to his apartment to talk to, and he calls his aunt hot, obviously.
Yes.
Low-hanging fruit. And then is the call where he goes to the airport for the fight.
I was mixing up scenes from Homecoming and scenes from Civil War. Yeah. Now let's take it even further real quick, right? The first appearance of Tom Holland Spider-Man is that scene from the trailer. It is under ruse, steals Captain America's shield. That there was nothing before that that preempted he was going to be in the film. There was no trailer that preempted he was going to be in the film. That's the first you saw of him. What reaction do we get more? Oh, well, why would they put him, a new Spider-Man, 2 years later in this film right after we had failed Andrew Garfield? Or, oh, does this mean that we're getting a new Spider-Man franchise? And it's more positive, excited reaction.
Oh, man. My gut reaction is that people would be... Oh, this is very interesting. Man. Mm-hmm. My gut reaction is that people would not be very happy about Spider-Man just being introduced without knowing anything about this version of Peter. Because look at what happened... not to bring it up again. It's like a fucking dead horse. But Suicide Squad, you know, the opening sequence that introduces 14 different people, but it's not really introducing them because it doesn't say anything about them. It seems similar to what we're kind of saying, like Spider-Man just showing up. You know, it's like, oh, okay, there he is. He's there now. I feel like it'd be awesome, but they would need the deftest hand to be able to, like, explain who he is possibly after without making it kind of, like, annoying mm-hmm. and obnoxious, you know?
Yeah.
Being like, oh, who's that guy? And Tony's like, oh, he's this kid, and I went to his apartment, and this is what happened, and stuff like that, you know?
Very true.
So, I guess the way they did it possibly was the only way they could have done it, you know, that worked.
That's a very good point. It's interesting what you bring up. There's got to be some kind of origin story when introducing any new superhero, and whether it's
any major one,
whether it is somebody we've seen before or not. And a lot of people with Spider-Man get very irritated at, oh, we have to tell the Uncle Ben story again. Right. Because they're like, we've seen it before. Well, yeah, you might have seen it before, but is it going to bother you more if you don't get the backstory? Because if Uncle Ben is a part of Tom Holland's Spider-Man, then it would probably bother you if you didn't hear anything about Uncle Ben and they were just like, Uncle Ben did the business. You're like, well, why didn't you show us anything about that? Because every human being's reaction to a situation is going to be different. And it's going to affect them differently. So, from little Bruce Wayne watching his parents get shot, he might fall to the ground in tears. He might be traumatized for the rest of his life. He might go stone face in surprise. He might go dead eyed in immediately, like, angered by the situation. Like, so many different things could arise from that one reaction from what we've seen 1,000 times. And it just made me think of, in Spider-Verse, don't they mock the introduction of Spider-Man's backstory, like, over and over again? Where it's like, each time a new Spider-Man shows up, they're like, so this is my story. And then don't they eventually start, like, shortening it and cut them off and whatnot? Because they're like, yeah, you've heard
it before. Oh, that's a great, great point. Yeah, no, they did it. That movie is, like, so fucking good.
It's beautiful.
Exactly. For more reasons than, like, just the animation, even though. Mm-hmm. I think what we're getting to here is a very meta discussion about the warrants of changing things in, like, these kinds of superhero movies.
Yeah.
Because, basically, look at the... I hate generalizing, but it's also all I do.
Yeah.
The kinds of people that love these movies love familiarity. They love seeing things that they recognize. They can, you know, have fan service and all that shit. That's Star Wars. That's Marvel.
For
sure. DC. That's fucking every series of films out there. Fucking Lord of the Rings did it with The Hobbit at the intro of the first film with Bilbo, which, rest in peace, Ian Holm.
Oh my gosh, recently. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But it's like, if you change anything, is it worth it? Or is there going to be a giant backlash?
Yeah.
So I feel like we're not going to get anywhere with this discussion because because there's too many things and too many people, and people don't like change, but you think they would. Mm-hmm. And then when you think you change it, they don't like that change, you know?
I think, you know what, John Leguizamo? You just gave the the best explanation right there. Let's just bring it down to core essence of what we can control. Our controlled group here, you and me. All right. Let's take everything we've talked about today. We've got.
Can we watch The Pest?
Of course. And I actually think it's mandatory that we watch The Pest.
okay.
So, so we talked about John Leguizamo. That, of course, is not what I meant to just say.
So basically, for the past 40-ish minutes, we've been talking strictly about John Leguizamo.
Man, he is much like a real pest. He just engraved himself in his brain, and I completely forgot about everything but him for 2 seconds. Okay.
God bless.
So, we've talked about Joel Schumacher and his take on Batman and how the backlash he got. Against familiarity and against there's a sense of familiarity that caused any of that controversy with him, whether it was coming from a darker side or a comic side. We talk about the backlash of The Hobbit, and we also talk about the backlash of the introduction of the third Spider-Man. where do you stand on when familiarity is good and necessary versus when familiarity is being almost, it's almost only there for the sake of a cash grab?
Familiarity kind of sucks,
mm-hmm.
in many ways, and it can, in my opinion, be a hindrance in many ways. Every film franchise you just described was originally based on something else.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, think of... Oh, yikes. Should I even get into fucking, like, into film, you know? Into film? Not like, you know, movies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But film.
Cinema.
With a big... yeah, cinema. You know?
With a big ass.
Because, like, I can... Because I almost said the only time familiarity is important is for structure. And then I realized,
huh.
No, that's not true at all. You know, like so many, like I fucking love The Tree of Life, and that movie doesn't have a structure at all. It's like weird as shit.
Very,
you know?
Good point.
I love shit that's like out there.
Even
and
Memento,
fresh
if you count
new.
That, where it's, it technically has a structure, but at the same time, it's a broken structure.
Check this movie out. So Dark the Night, brother, if you like Memento.
That is a weird cover for The Dark Knight.
Fuck you.
So Dark
the Night. It's a
great
movie. It's an old noir. I think I'm the worst person to ask this.
Hmm.
Because I tolerate... I just said I about 18 times.
Yeah.
I tolerate the Marvel movies at this point. I understand them. I get it. They are well made. If a bit... samey, they all feel the same, obviously. It's nothing new. I'm not brave for saying that. I hate the current state of Hollywood, so I don't really like seeing movies anymore, especially in theaters. Not that I can, you know, mm-hmm. physically right now. I think I hate it being alive.
Let's
I think that's a good way to end this. I think I just hate being
alive. Let's sum it up real quick on a different note. Let's just hit it directly, okay? Just look at it.
Let's fucking hit it and quit it, bro.
Let's just strictly from a movie standpoint for you. Watching Joel Schumacher's Batman for the first time, no trailer, with whatever background of Batman knowledge you have, do you appreciate the familiarity or do you think it's unnecessary?
I like it when he takes out a bat card, and it's a credit card with Batman's logo on it. And it the expiration date is, it says... what does it say? Never or something? That's what I like.
All right. In a way, you kind of answered my question of you went beyond familiarity. You liked the unique take on it. Okay. So we're going to move on. We're going to move on to The Hobbit. Now, with knowledge of the book.
No!
Great. That's all I wanted. Now, Tom Holland. You don't get the trailer. You don't get anything.
No!
He appears. You do not like the fact that he shows up.
That's the same thing though that we're arguing right now. If they just showed him,
just want your response though. If he just pops up in that Underoos segment, do you appreciate the familiarity of Spider-Man, or do you hate this familiarity because you feel like they're only doing it for the money and not for the appreciation of the character that is Spider-Man?
I'd say they're so lazy that they can't even write in a proper introduction for the guy.
Interesting.
That's
there
what
you
I would
go.
Say.
There you go.
I finally answered something. It took me 35 minutes, and I finally answered something.
I like that you said
coherently.
It took you 35 minutes, and we've been recording for 53 minutes, so I don't know what we did 35 minutes ago that you answered correctly.
I was probably getting all pissy about something.
Was it back when I said Rockstar, and you corrected me to Rocksteady?
Oh, that was egregious. I almost stopped recording.
I'm glad that you kept going.
I was like, that's the line that I refused to cross, my friend.
And that's a shame, because I adore every single one of those Batman games. I just don't... I didn't know.
What do you think about the topics that we've discussed today,
friend? I think that I learned that sharing is caring.
Okay, what about Spider-Man?
I think that Tobey Maguire is the only boy that I ever wished was Spider-Man. And that's a personal take.
Okay.
What do you want? What do you want? I know that he's technically the only Spider-Man that doesn't have the web shooters accurate, because aren't they in the comics? They are around his. They are actually built technology based.
Okay, you know what sucks?
What?
that right there would have been an incredible thing to touch upon in terms of, like, familiarity and, like, fresh ideas.
Yeah.
The fact that in the adaptation of the comics, Sam Raimi was like, he's just a kid. Fuck it. Spider-Man in his wrists, baby. There it is. And it was done. It's, like, not even a thing. It doesn't matter. It's natural, bitch. And then that lends even more beauty to the sequel, one of the best films ever made, Spider-Man 2, mm-hmm. genuinely, I'm not even being an asshole, mm-hmm. Where he loses his powers, and that's an enormous plot point.
Yeah.
So sometimes fresh ideas are pretty good.
That's a really good way of putting it. The entire way that Spider-Man 2 unravels itself wouldn't have been the same if he was just like, oh, my web shooter is jammed. He went against familiarity of building the web shooters, but it helped completely drive his story. And it wasn't just like, oh, and he shoots webs from his fingers instead of from a wrist machine. It was like, no, he legitimately, like, wouldn't have had Spider-Man 2 if that wasn't a part of his character.
I wish that he did shoot webs out of each one of his fingers and toes. Just like weird looking. That's an idea right there, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What if the web came out of the fingers?
What if he wore spider boots that were guaranteed to bounce? Huh? Just a thought.
There it is. That's an idea. Are you being Orsi right now? You sound like him.
Now sit.
I was being Kurtzman.
What is this voice? What does this sound like to you? Is it?
Oh my God! Is that? Oh, was that Sid from Ice Age?
Sid Sauce.
I haven't seen that in so long, I don't even know exactly how to do it.
How do we end this?
Zane's gonna do a dance, and you're not gonna see any of it, so gotta go bye.
I don't wanna see it, so I'm gonna go, gotta go bye.